Welcome to the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I'm Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law, where we specialise in succession law, civil disputes and litigation in Queensland. If you want to safeguard your assets, navigate estate planning with confidence, or resolve legal conflicts effectively, you're in the right place. Join me each week as we break down complex legal issues into clear, practical insights, helping you protect your legacy and find solutions with certainty. Let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflict. I'm your host, Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law, and welcome to April. Easter is, upon us. How did that happen? But here we are, and we are continuing our kind of theme for this year is really getting back to the basics of estate planning and estates in Queensland. So this month, our focus is on enduring powers of attorney. Now, when I talk to my clients about estate planning, people just automatically think, oh, a will. It's not just a will. We look at a number of other things, and enduring powers of attorney is one of them, which I always encourage my clients to get along with their will. So an enduring power of attorney is a document whereby you as the principal appoint attorneys to make decisions for you in certain circumstances. So they are health, personal decisions, and also financial decisions. And usually it's for when people can't make those decisions for themselves anymore, so when they're incapacitated. So we're going to this month talk about kind of the basics of an enduring power of attorney, and we are starting this week with the structure of an enduring power of attorney. Now, full disclosure, these documents are available online. So the Department of, I think it's Justice and Attorney General is what the name is currently, they put online PDF copies of enduring powers of attorney for you to be able to fill out yourself. Now, there's reasons why you come with a solicitor, to come to a solicitor to get them done. Firstly, all the legal advice that I get to give you about them, I put a whole bunch of extra clauses in mine that cover certain scenarios. But it is something that if you really don't have one, you should have one. And so it is a form, and then I fill it out for you and add in all my little bits of extra pieces. So the basic structure of an enduring power of attorney is that firstly, you say who you are. That's very important. You're the principal, where you live, your contact details. Then there's a section in there for you to add any wishes that you might have or any directions for the attorneys in, doing their role as your attorney when you're a principal. For most people, we don't put anything in there. We leave that blank. And that's mainly because if you're appointing an attorney, my view is you should really be talking to your attorneys about what your wishes are and what your directions would be in circumstances where you're incapacitated. The only thing that I find that people generally put in there is really around wanting to stay in their home for as long as possible, you know, not being moved to a nursing home too early. Sometimes where there's multiple children, so let's say there's like five or six children in the family and the principal's only appointing one or two children, they might put a direction in there asking those attorneys to make sure that they're consulting with all their siblings when making decisions. So those are the kind of things that we can put in there, but it's really open to you whatever you want to put in there. Then the next section, you list out who your attorneys are. So attorneys have to be over 18. There's no real limit to how many attorneys that you can have, but my view is try not to have more than two or three acting jointly together, but you can appoint them in any kind of which way you want, successively, severally, which means any one of them can make a decision, by majority or jointly. What usually happens in circumstances is that where there's a couple, you have the spouse acting independently, and then you have all the children or one or two children then acting jointly if the spouse isn't available. That normally is what happens, and it's pretty much the same with individuals. They usually go with one person, and then if they can't do it, go with the next, or two or three people acting jointly together. So you list out all the attorney's details, and that's really so that if the enduring power of attorney is being used, they're able to contact your attorney. Then in the next section, we say what kind of decisions they're for. So usually when you're doing a short form, it's for both health and financial, but you can do two separate enduring powers of attorney for health decisions and financial decisions. You can also do a long form where in one document you appoint different attorneys for the different matters as well. So it just kind of depends. But for the majority of the time, we are doing it for both personal health decisions and financial decisions. Now, the next bit is quite important. It's to determine when it kicks in, right? So for health matters, what I say to people is really, it's what the doctors decide you can and cannot consent to at the point of time. So it may be, for example, that you're able to consent to getting an IV put in your arm, okay? That's still a medical procedure. You're able to consent to that, but you may not have the capacity to understand complex surgeries. So that's when the health decisions kind of come in around nursing homes, palliative care, that kind of thing. For financial matters, you get to dictate. And there's really two schools of thought, and I'm sure some of my lovely estate planning colleagues have some comments because I do differ on this point to a lot of people. So lots of people have their enduring power of attorney starting immediately, and there's lots of qualifications to that. And I am going to do a podcast on this like more in depth in, I think, 2 weeks. But for now, you can have it immediately, or for my enduring power of attorney, most of the time I have it starting for financial matters when someone has been deemed incapacitated by a medical practitioner. And that is the preference for most of my clients. Then you say how your attorneys are to act. So as we discussed just before, they can act successively, jointly, by majority or severally. And we put that in. I've got some special wording for that as well. And then you have space for extra terms and clauses. So I put in a bunch of extra things in my enduring powers of attorney. A reactivation clause. So if you get capacity back, get decision-making power back, allowing your attorneys to access super for various reasons, update your super nominations. I do a temporary guardianship clause when you have minors. So if, you know, if both of you are incapacitated, you're allowing someone to make medical decisions for your kids, pick them up, that kind of thing. I've also got a digital assets and accounts clause that I put in. So just a few extra little bits and pieces, which is really just reflective on things I see day to day in practice. So I've got those in there. And then the remainder of the enduring power of attorney, you can put in who you might want to notify if your enduring power of attorney is invoked. I never fill those out. I really don't know what the purpose of those is. That sounds like I don't know what I'm doing. But I think it's more for, you know, if I really don't know any decisions because I've never had any clients who have actually filled them out or come to me with one filled out. But I guess you can just say that if it's invoked, you want certain people to be notified that it's invoked. So that option is available for you, but you can, I just cross out all that bit and then you sign it. So it needs to be signed and witnessed by a lawyer, JP, Commissioner of Declarations. And that's really to say that they believe you understood what the document says and you have capacity to make that document, because this is one of these documents that you can only sign it and make an enduring power of attorney if you understand what it means, if you have capacity to understand what the document does. And then whoever witnessed it, there's a certificate, and then the attorneys sign their acceptance. Attorneys don't have to sign until they accept the appointment, but what I like to make sure is at least one person has signed it. So if you're a couple, it's a spouse. If you're not in a couple, I get the next person, your first attorney, I make sure that they've signed it. So just so that I have it, and then I keep them in my safe custody. And so I kind of have like some control over the release of the documents, and I can kind of get an idea of what's happening for you. And people love that idea too, that I'm just having kind of some oversight over the document. So that's the structure of an enduring power of attorney. If you are listening to this kind of at your desk or somewhere where you can download a copy, you could, I really should have said this at the beginning, shouldn't I? You could just go through the form whilst I'm talking. But it's quite a basic form, but to me, I think it's so important because you're appointing somebody to make these decisions for you when you're alive. Like you're still alive. Like a will, you're dead. You know, like who cares what happens? Well, people care what happens after they die. But you know, you're dead, right? No one's making these decisions about your life for you. Like you're alive. So it's really important in terms of thinking about who you appoint, who's an appropriate person, and then having a good understanding of what that means. So that is the basic structure of an enduring power of attorney. Next week, we're going to talk about attorneys generally, like who should they be, how should they act, how should they behave kind of thing. Because when you do an enduring power of attorney, you are under obligations under the Powers of Attorney Act in Queensland. So it's important that your attorneys are aware of that. So we'll talk about that next week. Thank you so much for listening today. You feel free to share this podcast with anybody that you think, gee, that person needs an enduring power of attorney, or I don't have one. Come up on my website, www.vicarlaw.com.au, book a free consultation with me, Lydia Vicar. I also have heaps of information on there about enduring powers of attorney if you want to know more. Thanks so much for listening, and I will speak to you next week. Bye. That's a wrap for this episode of the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I hope you found today's insights helpful in navigating your legal journey. If you're ready to take the next step in securing your legacy or finally dealing with your dispute, you can pop on my website, www.vicarlaw.com.au, to book a free consultation with me, Lydia Vicar. You can also subscribe to our newsletter or find out more about today's topic. Your future begins now, and we're here to guide you every step of the way. Until next time, I'm Lydia Vicar, signing off. The Vicar Podcast comprises general information and does not serve as a substitute for professional advice. Prior to making any legal decisions, individuals are advised to seek independent professional guidance and assess the suitability of this information for their own individual goals and objectives.